Hello, Internet. My name is Jonathan Cook.
And I'm Matt Noble.
And this week on the podcast, we're back to regularly scheduled programming. No more left field mix up, pop, pew, raise, mashes.
Yep.
Just
we're doing it.
Just one topic.
We went and saw a movie together.
Old
first
school.
Time in a while.
Old school screen verdict.
And we're going to review that movie now. That's how it works on the Screen Verdict podcast.
The film we'll be reviewing this week is Vice.
Dun 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 dun. Vice, Vice, baby.
Is that something you went to the effort of preparing?
I thought of it like 3 minutes ago.
So, as you've guessed, we are going to be reviewing the documentary Vice about the documentary series Vice.
Yeah.
You're
as cold as Vice.
All right, that was very brave. Matt has Vice in his veins.
Yeah.
Adam McKay's new film. Has he done anything else since The Big Short, or was that his most recent
one? I don't know.
One?
That's the last one I've seen of his. He's sort of an interesting dude, this Adam McKay, because he did like films that wouldn't be considered awardsy type films, right? Like
more out-and-out comedies.
Yeah. And then he did The Big Short, which was about a serious issue, the economic crash in 2008, political thing. Could be considered a bit of a boring thing to make a film about, too. But he sort of, it was still a sort of a funny movie, like, but it was, yeah, it was sort of interesting. He sort of blended this, like, comedy sensibilities with a serious topic and maybe something that could have been done in a dry way and sort of made it fun. Is that the right way to put it? Like, I sort of felt like it was pretty fun. Like, it, you know, cuts to Margot Robbie in a bathtub explaining, you know, economic investment theory and things.
Yeah, I thought it had a good balance of being informative and entertaining.
Mm, yeah, and it ended up garnering a lot of awards respect. Like, it ended up getting a lot of award nominations. It was a big player at the Oscars that mm-hmm. year too, and I think there was a lot of talk as to whether, like, I think, was that the year of Spotlight, the Big Short movie?
Spotlight, yeah.
I think it was a big talk. Will Spotlight or The Revenant win? And some people thought, well, maybe The Big Short will be sort of the dark horse. And it wasn't Spotlight won. But it was sort of in discussion for maybe even winning Best Picture that year a little mm-hmm. bit. I don't think it was ever the number one film to win, but, like, it was sort of in the discussion, so... Adam McKay, back in the saddle with another sort of serious political tie. I think it'd be fair to say this is sort of political, this movie.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll jump into it. I think we're going to do a spoiler podcast because, to be honest, this is just recent history. We're not... Nothing should come as too much of a surprise unless you...
Well, it's funny. There's a lot of Obama kids now, right? I just grew up with Obama as president. I don't really know what happened before.
Yeah. Well, in that case, it could be a spoiler. Mm. Most will spoil a couple of the bits. We won't spoil all the...
Yeah.
The jokes, etc. But we'll give you a quick spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert! Woo!
Spoilers.
It's interesting saying, like, you know, most people know the history, people lived through it, but it's interesting. My mum saw this movie and she was saying, oh, I loved it, but this Dick Cheney guy, he was up to some interesting that you need to tell me more about him. I had no idea what he was up to in the back rooms. Like, so it might be, it's sort of, I think a lot of people, at least who grew up at the time, know about George W. Bush, know about things like the war in Iraq, but maybe less people know about what the vice president was getting up to at that time.
Yeah, so it kind of, it sort of follows Dick Cheney's, I would say
Dick Cheney was the vice president under George W. Bush.
Oh, yeah.
Just in case there are listeners who don't know who Dick Cheney is.
Yes.
That's we've probably already lost them, and now everyone that's still listening now thinks I'm talking down to them.
All right, listen up, idiots. I was going to say the first half of the film kind of follows him from being around college-aged up until the vice presidency, and then the second half of the film is the vice presidency.
Mm. Yeah.
I felt like I learned more in the first half, kind of the background of Dick Cheney. Like, I knew probably like a couple of Wikipedia bullet points and, you know, him being the CEO of Halliburton, but I didn't know sort of all the people that he worked for, the relationships that he had garnered. And I think probably his relationship with Donald Rumsfeld was probably one of the most interesting things in the first half of the film. So Dick Cheney played by Christian Bale, Donald Rumsfeld played by Steve Carell, one of our favorites.
Yeah, I love Steve Carell.
Yeah. So what pulled you in at all in the first half of the film?
Well, I didn't know that Dick Cheney worked on telegraph poles. That was something that really... So it's pretty much first job that we see in the movies, him just up on the telegraph poles, string lines and go, boy, he's going to become vice president one day. And I guess partly what triggers that is... he's a bit of an alcoholic as well, so he's drinking a lot, he's up on the telegraph poles, your blue-collar Joe sort of thing, and he's a bit drunk, he gets bailed out of jail or something like that, and his wife, Lynn, played by another favourite of ours, Amy Adams, she pulls him aside and goes, this is enough, like, this is, you make something of yourself.
Once, fine, but twice?
Yeah. I'm not going to be one of those people like my mum who, like, isn't treated very well and is with a loser. You go out and make something for yourself, Dick. And boy, does he ever. Does he ever.
Now, knowing Dick Cheney and knowing Adam McKay's politics, I thought this was going to be a very anti-Dick Cheney movie.
Mm.
And I'm not saying this was a pro-Dick Cheney movie, but... there were some things...
Cheney 2020! we're ready. No, jokes.
You could say that there were some things that were shown in a positive light. For example, he starts out as like a drunk, a bit of a, as they say in the film, a ne'er-do-well.
Yeah.
And he does seeming... he does apparently stop drinking. It's not like the drinking remains a part of Dick Cheney throughout the rest of the film. So it does seem like he cleans up his act a bit.
Yes.
And regardless of what direction you think with his politics, he does get a proper job. He does provide for his family. So that was sort of an interesting thing to say.
He doesn't care for his family too, genuinely. He seems to be someone who, you know.
That was one of the other things that stood out, that even though I guess he didn't support gay marriage, the fact that he had a daughter that was a lesbian meant that he didn't want to be the face of that. He wasn't going to go after that, and he didn't want his daughter involved in you know, and things to do with the public circle. Didn't want that to be like a storyline. We don't actually know what happened, how she came out to her parents, but in that scene he was actually very accepting, which you might not have expected.
Yeah. Yes. So I think that's true. I still feel like he is very... he's a villainous character in this
movie. Those are probably the two... like, if you're doing a list of pros and cons, those are probably the only pros I could think of.
And I feel like they... and I don't... like, I know we said we'd do spoilers, so this is going to be a bit of a spoiler. I think even on the thing with his daughter, there's a very dark side to that at the very end of the film. They definitely, like, bury him a little bit on that issue at the end.
I guess we can talk about that. We don't need to go exactly in order, I guess. So his other daughter, is it Leslie?
Mary?
I think the one that's a lesbian is Mary. The one that runs is...
Liz? I think he's got a daughter called Liz. Anyway, he's got a daughter.
It's an L name.
He's got a daughter.
She runs for Congress, I believe, in Wyoming.
Yep.
And she comes out against gay marriage, which is upsets the lesbian daughter, and there's this line that she, you know, she wouldn't have done that unless you know, mum and dad
signed off
on that, and they do this like flashback to it, and he gives this like little nod.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure how I felt about that, because we know for a fact that he didn't come out against it. and to imply that he gave his daughter the okay to come to run against it. Do we know that for sure? It kind of felt like, nah, we're going to try and undercut the one good thing,
the one redeeming thing to a liberal audience. Mm-hmm. We're going to undercut at the end of the movie.
Which, unless you know he did that, I feel is a bit disingenuous.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe there is evidence for that, yeah, but I felt like...
We have not researched anything since seeing the movie.
Again, not defending Dick Cheney, just saying if you're going to do the anti-Dick Cheney thing, I think that should be... You know, you should have support for that.
The stuff you know.
And we don't know what he did to influence the daughter's campaign.
Yeah. So, a few little redeeming things. Largely a villainous character.
Yeah, who is... What did you get about Dick Cheney? Who is Dick Cheney, basically? What did we learn? What are his defining characteristics? What do you think he was pursuing in his career in this film?
I think power. Mm-hmm. He definitely wanted power. And he wanted the president to have a lot of power, not even just power for himself, but he believed very strongly that the president should be able to do what he had very authoritarian sensibility, like inclinations.
Yeah. So it was interesting at the start. It didn't seem like he had a political affiliation. Hmm. It seemed like he joined this internship program for something in DC, and then Donald Rumsfeld gets up and gives a speech, and this guy next to him says, all right, we're supposed to divvy up the sort of who works with a Democrat and a Republican. Do you mind if I work with a Democrat? And then Dick Cheney says, who's that guy? And the guy looks up. He's like, oh, Rumsfeld, he's a Republican. He's like, oh, that great. That's what I am.
That's my party.
I don't think that's because he actually knew the differences and identified as a Republican.
No.
I just thought, oh, I like that guy's speech.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So there's even a question later on where he says to Donald Rumsfeld, what do we believe? And that cracks Rumsfeld up.
Yeah.
So it seems like, at least in the beginning, in the early days, he doesn't have a political opinion or...
Would you get, like, I think even that scene with Donald Rumsfeld, it's a bit what you were saying before, which is like, we don't know that, like... I feel like, again, best maybe a little disingenuous to just, like, portray, like, someone asked Donald Rumsfeld what he believes, he's just going to laugh in his face and slam the door. Because I'm sure if we spoke to Donald Rumsfeld right here,
he would have an answer for that question.
Yeah, like, what do you believe in? Not defending Donald Rumsfeld, I think he's one of the most dangerous figures that have been in the, you know, government in the past sort of two decades or whatever. But, like, I do think that is... clearly, Adam McKay has some views on these people, which is somewhat supported by the decisions that they made and the things that happened in the government. It's not completely out of thin air.
So I think at the start, perhaps he just likes the game, trying to work his way up the ranks, just enjoys being near powerful people, earns more money, is able to provide for his family.
Hmm.
And... somewhere along the way, he seems to become intrigued by, and I'm going to get the name wrong probably, but is it something like the executive legislative theory?
Oh, something like, yeah.
Basically, the thought that the Constitution indicates that basically anything the president does is legal because he's the president.
Mm.
Almost kind of elevating a president to the status of a dictator in some regards.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, up for debate. I'm not saying that's what the Constitution says, but some people believe this. And he hears about this, and he goes, I like this.
Mm.
And I was interested to see why he liked this theory so much.
Because he wasn't the president at that point.
He wasn't the president, and wasn't that close to becoming the president.
No.
He wasn't like he was already VP. This was earlier in his political career. And it seemed like all the people that were supporting this were conservative people.
Mm.
Do you think they still love this theory if there's a liberal president in power? They go, you know what? I hate this guy and I hate everything he stands for, but he should be able to do whatever he wants because of this executive theory of ours.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Because it seemed like... And it's hard because...
And that goes both ways. There might be liberal people out there that... like this executive theory, even though it doesn't quite align, but then would not like it when there's a conservative president in power. It's a strange theory to be such a fan of, to me.
I think I've only seen some hypocrisy on the left where there's people that, like, gave Obama a free pass for things that they might have not given other, like, Bush or Trump a pass for. But it does not seem to the extreme element here where you've seen such a dogmatic, like, pursuit of executive power that clearly isn't pushed for under the Democratic presidents.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it, like, I wouldn't say it's equivalent, but I'm sure there are people on the left who are...
So he likes this, and this informs a lot of his decisions.
It's almost like that informs his decision. Like, it's almost like, it's sort of like, you know, chicken and egg sort of thing, but I sort of, maybe not, I'm going to put forward to try and think, I suppose. He likes this idea about executive power, and that almost... Like, once he goes, yes, this is what I believe in, it's sort of that prompts him to want to try to be president.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's sort of, it's not like, oh, I'm now president, I want more power. It's like, oh, the president can have a lot of power, I now want to be as close to the president as possible.
Yeah. So, let's see. He ends up getting quite high up in... He gets up, like, fairly high up in, the Nixon administration.
Yeah.
And then...
The Ford, particularly. Reagan. I think Ford in particularly, like after Nixon's impeached, I feel like, you know, because Dick Cheney's like watching TV and, like, you know, I think, like, is it Lynn or one of his daughters crying, like, what are they doing to our president? Yeah. And Dick Cheney's like, this could be good.
I think they delved into it a little bit. Some of the interesting parts of the film were those political games, like, you know, we're all Republicans, but Nixon doesn't like Rumsfeld as much, or Nixon's people don't like Rumsfeld as much. So even though I like Nixon, Nixon getting the boot could actually help me because that means Rumsfeld and I can get more important
And Rumsfeld had been shipped off somewhere, so he had no connection with Watergate. So I think Cheney was like, I can leverage this. I can, you know, say, hey, why don't we get this guy in? He's been in Brussels. He wasn't involved in Watergate at all. Let's give him a top position.
So he finds success there as well as with the Reagan and H.W. Bush administrations.
Yeah.
Was there anything that particularly stood out during that time period?
Not particularly. I think what the interesting thing was, like, it sort of, since the film covers such a large amount of time, you know, you sort of got Democratic, it focuses mainly on the Republican presidents, but then you got Jimmy Carter becomes president for 4 years, Bill Clinton becomes president for 4 years. It's almost like this creepy thing where like, you know, he's sort of like Dick Cheney's just like, what, like, you know, he's never killed by these political losses. He just goes into this hibernation period.
Yes.
Like, you know, like, he will reemerge and he will be more powerful the next time than he was. Like, he's refueling, like.
And they do put up that quote, something along the lines of, beware the quiet man, while as the loud man talks, the quiet man plans, and when the loud man stops talking, the quiet man is ready to strike.
Yeah,
something like that. So that was kind of the impression, that he was always kind of like the cogs were turning, but you didn't really see any major things get put into play. And then he kind of just dips in the 90s to go work in the private sector.
Yeah.
It didn't really cover his time at all at Halliburton. We kind of just jump forward in time. Yeah. To when George W. Bush is running in 2000.
And this is interesting because, like, Dick Cheney at this point, I think, has given up all hopes of ever becoming president. Like, there was one cycle where he's thinking of running, realized that just it wasn't doable.
His poll numbers were bad.
He's not the most charismatic individual. Like, you know, he's not the most electric
guy. He also had a few health issues. I think he had maybe two heart attacks, possibly three heart attacks at that point.
Yeah. The thing with his daughter was politically, I think, you know, an issue. Like, and I don't know if it was like completely a political issue or just something he didn't want to put his daughter through, but, like, regardless, he managed not to run for president. And I think it's so, this was quite interesting that, like, through, he realized that if you've got this unchecked power on the presidency, that actually a bit of a sidestep to it is, if you became a very powerful vice president, you could have, you know, sort of like a back door to that unchecked authority.
Yeah, I guess kind of the big hook, pun intended, in the film is realizing the potential and making the play and getting the vice presidency, which didn't actually seem that hard because George Bush wanted him pretty much off the bat.
Do we ever figure out why George W. Bush wanted him as vice president from this movie?
I think he said that some people thought he lacked experience, and because he had been chief of staff and what else he had been?
Yeah.
Was he a secretary or something? Anyway, because he had a good list of job experience, that would kind of add to George Bush's ticket. Anyway, just to explain why I said pun intended after the hook.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
There was a lot of fishing imagery throughout the film.
Well, the end credits are just all pictures of fish hooks as well, so yeah.
And what that's kind of been setting up is when George Bush asks him to be the vice president, initially says no because he thinks this is just like a placeholder. It's just like in title only, no real power.
Yeah.
But then he realizes, I think George Bush is the kind of person that I could manipulate, and we could perhaps change the role of the vice presidency, and then using this executive theory kind of indirectly through that, we could give the vice presidency even more power.
Hmm.
So he says, oh, I'll help you look for a vice president. Yeah. But then when he gets George Bush to actually pick him based on the negotiating a new role for the vice president, that's when the line starts to shake. You've got him. You've got something. You reel him in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think that is interesting because the vice presidency is really, constitutionally, the vice president is, you cast tie votes in the Senate. You're the president of the Senate, swearing all the senators and things. And you are next in line if the president dies. I think constitutionally that's the role. So anything outside of that is up to the discretion of the president and, I guess, the vice president. Like, they can, you know, how much they do is really up for... So if the president secedes any of that authority or high status to the vice president, I think the vice president's allowed to run with it.
Mm-hmm.
And run with it, he does.
So you might ask the question, if you want a lot of power, what do you want to do with that power? So when Dick Cheney becomes the vice president and finds himself having access to more power, what do you think his goals are?
I know what his goals are. I'm not 100% clear on what his motives are. But I think the goals are to bring democracy to the Middle East and oil to America, American companies.
So, okay. Interesting. I guess we don't want this to be a political podcast. No. It's more about the film. I'll just say it's interesting that you think the goal is democracy in the Middle East.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Elaborate. Like, you don't just give your own political opinion just from the film. Have I just brought my own thoughts in there? Or
I guess that might be what Dick Cheney might say, but I don't think he ever said that in the film.
Okay. What about American influence to the Middle
East?
Absolutely. Like, I think that's absolutely what I meant rather than democracy. Yeah, it's like, but like, I want us to bring an American brand of whatever into this part of the world. We want to get in here. And I think also, like, there was a part of, and I'm not sure if this is me putting stuff on it, like a bit of a, you know, politics of fear to stay in power almost.
Yes. So I'm sure he had opinions on a number of issues, but this tended to, the film focused on Iraq.
Yeah.
And one of the things they mentioned was that I think in 2001, they showed him looking at a map of Iraqi oil fields and discussing which American companies would be interesting in taking over those.
Yeah.
So very early on, he's interested in that, even though they don't end up invading until much later. And so it's interesting because there's a lot of kind of discussion and debate as to whether to go into Iraq. how connected that was to 9/11. You see focus groups, you see arguments within in the Oval Office, and he doesn't overtly argue for it. He kind of just like sneaks in little bits. Rumsfeld obviously argues for it, but most people argue against it. I thought that little influence, I guess, of George Bush was going to be a bigger part of the film.
Yeah.
But I couldn't really see how he convinced convinced George Bush in any way.
I feel like there wasn't enough George Bush in this film.
Hmm.
And I get, I think it's a very compelling premise is we've got this, like, what happens when the vice president, like, really asserts his high status and power? You usually don't have the high status vice president. So, like, I think that's interesting and working out this little loophole. But I think to fully flesh that, you need to see a bit more of the president-vice president relationship. And I didn't see that fleshed out very well in it, or well in this one, where I really got a handle at how George W. Bush was being influenced by him. Like, I guess in some ways it's just billed as a he's less interested than Dick Cheney in this. And I'm not sure if that's what my thoughts on George W. Bush necessarily are, that, like, he wasn't interested in that sort of side of things.
Yeah, I thought this film was going to be more about how Dick Cheney influenced or manipulated George Bush, whether that was based on giving him certain information or misinformation or playing on him psychologically, you know, based on his relationship with his father.
Yeah.
And I don't think we ended up seeing that much of it in this film.
Yeah.
So that perhaps was less interesting than I had hoped. I guess the focus groups was kind of interesting, how they would use that to present it to the media. So you have a focus group and someone saying, you ask them a question about Al-Qaeda and someone's like, I don't understand what Al-Qaeda is. Al-Qaeda a country? How are we like fighting them? They say, well, if like Al-Qaeda was a country, would that make more sense? It's like, yeah, then we're bombing Al-Qaeda. That makes more sense. So it was interesting how they said, you know, if we say that there is Iraq is the enemy, that's a country, we're going to go invade Iraq, fight a war with Iraq. That would be something the public would understand instead of, well, there's insurgents here and we do little operations here because that's going to affect Al-Qaeda this way. Like, that the general public was not wrapping their head around.
Yeah.
So I thought that was one of the more interesting thing that they kind of learned in a focus group and then used to present to the media, the narrative that they wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. I think another pivotal scene just about what Dick Cheney's about is that there was him and Steve Carell, like playing Donald Rumsfeld during the, I think, Nixon administration, and they were standing outside the Oval Office and Donald Rumsfeld is like, on the other side of that door, the president and Kissinger, two men, they're deciding, you know, if a village is going to get bombed, like, next week, and that's going to happen. You know, welcome to Washington or something like that. And I think that was quite pivotal for Dick Cheney in this movie, in he liked the sound of that. He liked, I want to be making these big decisions that are going to have a big impact on people's lives halfway around the world, because then I can feel big. I wonder if that's the motive. I wonder if he wants to feel big, wants to feel important. He wants to be doing stuff that affects people, for better or for worse.
Yeah, perhaps when I asked, what do you do with that power? Maybe that's a dumb question. Maybe some people don't really care. They don't really care about like policy or politics. They just like the power.
Yeah.
And I was glad that they included that scene because I think a lot of people have opinions on Iraq. Not as many people have opinions on Vietnam as so much like a younger generations would think, hang on, like they bombed a village. Is that something that actually happened?
Yeah.
And that might encourage people to look up, you know, bombings in Cambodia and Vietnam, etc.
So yeah, no, I like that. And I think that, and I think even Donald Rumsfeld even said in that scene, for better or for worse, this is happening. I wonder if like Dick Cheney just wanted to do stuff for better or for worse. Yeah. Like he wanted to, he was a big believer in, we did some improv classes this week and he was a big believer in like Buy the ticket, ride the ride. If you're going to buy the ticket, you better go all in on it.
Yeah, I want to roll the dice.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter the outcome, I just don't want someone else to roll the dice. I just want to be a part of the game.
And I'm sure Dick Cheney believed what he was doing was the right thing to do. I'm not saying maybe not. I don't know.
The way it's presented in the film, there is clearly false information. You know that this is not true, and yet it is what you're saying and telling the public.
But there's people who lie because they, like, the ends justifies the means sort of thing, where he probably thought, like, oh yeah, it is good, we blow up. Like, I'm sure Dick Cheney believes in his heart of hearts that, you know, oh yeah, it's good we got rid of Saddam Hussein. Oh, I'm not sure exactly what happened with the oil and things like that. Maybe that wasn't as clear cut, but like, I'm sure he, like, in some other things, it was the right idea to try to take out Saddam Hussein and get that America, like, get Halliburton and all that oil.
Yes, the, like, the fact that Halliburton stock rose 500% is a happy coincidence.
Yeah, but I'm sure he thought, that's good. It's good for Halliburton to have fiber. That's an American company. That's
do you hate American stock?
Yeah. Like,
you're just jealous you didn't invest in Halliburton.
Mm. Yeah.
So, where does it kind of go after the invasion of Iraq? Is there anything more interesting politically? Or does it then go to his heart and the
personal stuff? So he has heart problems. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, he has heart problems. Turns out the guy narrating the film is a guy that... don't know if... I guess that if he got a real person's heart, they would use the real person's story, unless that's undisclosed. We don't know whose heart he got.
So, it's interesting. I thought it was a huge coincidence that the person who, like, Dick Cheney ended up getting the heart on knew so much about the Cheney, like, life story and everything.
Maybe it's not a real person. I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway, the person narrating the film says, I know a lot about Dick Cheney, I'll get to that later. When they actually explain it, realistically would not give you any information about Dick Cheney at all.
Yeah.
But anyway, his guy seemed to be in the army, was back in the US, went for a jog, gets hit by a car, he dies, and while Dick Cheney is having heart problems and needs a new heart, and doesn't look like he's going to get one, there's no available donor, this guy dies, and they go, actually, we do have a heart for you. And they're able to give Dick Cheney a heart transplant.
And the thing is, the whole thing of the movie, I feel like at this point, like, he was about to die, he didn't have a heart, and I feel like then he gets the heart transplanted, the audience is like, oh, what? the audience is real again, this guy? Like, you thought he was, like, I feel like people, like, I feel like the film set up in a way where you're wanting him to just die then.
So apparently he refers to it as his new heart. He doesn't refer to it as someone else's heart, which this dead guy resents.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, a character decision. We have no idea what the dead guy's opinion on that is or would have been.
It's just good we didn't get the dead guy's opinion on what Liz Cheney's position on gay marriage should have been. Goes, I thought that was the right decision too.
So I guess Cheney gets this new heart, and then it kind of ends with what we already talked about, really, with the daughter running
thing. Yeah.
And then the final scene is him giving an interview.
Oh, yes.
In which he breaks the fourth wall, turns away from the interviewer, looks to camera.
Just like a game of cat and mouse. This he fully Frank Underwood said.
Maybe that was intentional. Yeah. Like, Adam McCabe thinks Dick Cheney and Frank Underwood are similar people.
Yeah.
And essentially the two camera speech is I did what needed to be done. I don't care if people think I'm a mean man.
I kept you and your family safe.
Yeah. Would you not stop a terror attack just if you thought people would view you as mean? And I thought this was a little bit confusing because this didn't really seem like the deepest, most honest truth from Dick Cheney. This seemed like what Dick Cheney would say in the interview, perhaps just a little bit more directly and angrily, but in terms of the argument behind it, didn't seem to be, you know, a reveal.
Yeah, the whole film, we've got him focus grouping things, we've got him divvying up the oil on maps to the company. He's got like, oh, I know this guy, like, isn't really that involved in things, but he's the only connection we've got between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, and we want to go in there, so let's, like, just torture him and think, like... this is the first time it's revealed to us that keeping people safe is his MO. Mm-hmm. Right? So, yeah, I didn't get what that added at all, other than just a bit, like, confusion as to what Dick Cheney, like, oh, is this now the truth or is this Dick Cheney's spin? Like, I don't really know. Like, it's very, I agree with you. Left field.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the end of the film. Were there any other bits that we missed you want to go back to or any sort of overarching things you want to comment on?
I think just on that thing we were just talking about, like, I think a more real thing for him to say would have been like, for better or for worse, I made these decisions, but you've never had this power. You don't know what you would do with this. I think that would have been a better way to end it.
I don't agree. I see the argument, I guess, but I don't...
What do you mean? You don't agree with...
His logic.
I don't agree with that logic. I don't agree with that logic at all. But I think that's more true to the character we saw.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I guess that kind of ties into, like, the torture stuff. Like, there was, you know, he kept on going to, like, legal experts that would be like, what way can we look at the Constitution or the Geneva Convention or something that we could do alternatively? You know, it's open to interpretation that we can use in a different way that's been done before. And I guess that comes as the same part of the same argument. Ah, you might not be able to stomach torture, but I did what needed to be done. Which, you know what? I think I would prefer it if someone had just, that was in favor of torture, just said, yeah, torture's effective. We're going to torture people because they're terrorists and it'll make us safer. Regardless of whether you agree with that, you go, okay, you've stated an opinion, it's open and honest, and you're sticking to it. And again, I don't know if we have any Dick Cheney quotes that are like this, but in the film there's a scene where George Bush says, aren't these enhanced interrogation techniques kind of like torture? And then his lawyer says, the US doesn't torture. And then Dick Cheney says, and therefore by definition, anything the United States isn't torture.
So like, you get the George W. Bush, he's like,
That's just not logical. That is just this is a horrible fallacy.
It's very similar to the, well, the president can't do anything illegal, therefore if the president does it, it's not illegal, right? It's a similar
I see the comparison, but I think this is even
worse. I agree. This is an extension of that. Because
you could say that, yeah, the president is above the law, but you can't... The statement, the US doesn't torture, is only true or false based on whether or not they do torture. You can't just say it and therefore that's the base assumption of truth.
The absurdity to that logic gets to, so America does X to individual A, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I've added A. The United States does X to someone, right? And that's not torture because the US doesn't torture. Well, what happens if North Korea does X to someone?
Mm-hmm.
Is that now definitionally not torture because the US have done that?
No, they would definitely consider it torture.
Yeah, that's the problem. Is either like you're saying, well, things that are torture aren't because we do them like, we can do whatever we want, or it's, we are going to, just whenever we do something, it changes what torture is in the world for any actor.
Yeah.
But this is the, you know, this is the big, like, horrific thing of the Bush administration, was this torture program. Like, this was, like, the big scant, like, you know, of all the scant, like, that and the weapons thing, these are the big blights of that administration.
They kind of condensed a lot of them into that restaurant scene where they've gone together with the lawyers, and then they do this kind of fake restaurant scene where a waiter comes and says, oh, would you like to order the, you know, the enhanced interrogation, the surveillance without warrants, and all these different kinds of things. The
Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah, the Guantanamo Bay. And then they say, you know, we'll take it all. It all sounds delicious. So they did a couple of bits like that, the same way they did in The Big Short with the Margot Robbie scene.
Yeah.
I can only think of one or two of them. That, there was also the fake out credit scene where after Dick Cheney did his one good thing about his daughter, they then have him like on like a country house, and it says, Dick Cheney retired and never went into politics again. He lives with Lynn raising award-winning golden retrievers or whatever, and then the credits start to roll.
So there are a lot of these little Adam McKay things in the film, like a fake credits. There's quotes that pop up on screen. There's like, it's a bit of a mishmash of different things. So, yeah.
I felt like there were less in Vice than The Big Short.
Yeah.
Overall, there was some comedy in it, but I felt like the comedy to drama ratio had a higher content of drama in Vice than was Big Short.
I'd agree. I'd agree. Right. Okay.
Are we ready for a verdict?
Yeah.
Vice. I thought the performances were great. I think Christian Bale did a really good job as Dick Cheney, and the hair and makeup department did a very good job too. He did look a lot like Dick Cheney. I thought the film did an interesting job of kind of covering a lot within a 2-hour period. Yeah. You did get a good amount of history. You got a reasonable amount of insight. I felt like I learned less than I did in Big Short. And maybe that's just because I'm more informed on Dick Cheney in Iraq than I was the global financial crisis. But I felt like it was less eye-opening, which may or may not be the film's fault. It was less funny. And a film doesn't have to be funny. You can make your film more dramatic if you want to. But I enjoyed watching The Big Short a bit more. I felt like as I mentioned, it didn't delve into the George Bush relationship as much as it could have. Again, you can find out political facts, but there's only so much you can find out about what goes on behind closed doors. And it's just sort of like a creative choice what to emphasize and what to sort of assume happened. I guess I felt there wasn't a driving force that had me really engaged, really hooked. It was kind of like, okay, another fact. Yeah, he did this. There wasn't like a big goal or a sneaky or a particularly clever way of achieving that goal or a big reveal or a big surprise. And when it ended, I thought, yeah, that was well done, but I didn't personally really emotionally connect to it that much or enjoy it that much. So I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10.
Yeah, this movie, I think, tells a very important story. I think, like, in terms of this, hopefully I don't get too political here, but I do think in particularly our current climate, it's very easy to, things are so bad now, they're worse than they've ever been. And in some ways, they probably are. But I do think there are some horrible things that went down, like, you know, 12 years ago or however long ago it was. And I think it's good that those stories are being told. It's an interesting one. Performances are great. Christian Bale, Amy Adams, Steve Carell, Sam Rockwell, fantastic. Great cast. They're doing well. I think because, like, you know it's Steve Carell the whole time. You know it's Amy Adams the whole time. You know it's Sam Rockwell the whole time. Like, the makeup is very good on Christian Bale, so it doesn't look like him the whole time. But it does mean, you know, it does almost seem like a little bit more of a comic retelling of the story than just like a flat out full on drama, particularly when you add those Adam McKay quirks to the storytelling.
The Shakespeare bit, that was one I forgot.
Yeah. So I think that makes it quite interesting. So it was good. I thought it was a bit hit and miss. I think some bits worked a lot better than other bits in the film. Like, I think that narration to the camera at the end was a real miss. I don't know what it added. It sort of distracted from what I thought the key themes of the movie and the character were. I think the bits where the credits roll in the middle is quite fun and work quite well, actually. So some things worked, some things didn't. It was ultimately, I think, really good, but not a perfect movie. I'll give it 7.5 out of 10 as well.
There you go. In agreement, we might, despite the volatile political climate here at Screen Verdict, we found a way to come to a mutual agreement.
Yes.
7.5. Well, there you go. Let us know what you thought of Vice. Yeah. Go to facebook.com/Screen Verdict Podcast. Let us know. Also, let us know if there's any films or shows that you want us to review. It's award season's coming up, so I'm sure we'll be seeing a lot of those big films. But let us know if there's anything you'd specifically like us to talk about.
Yeah. There we go. Are we doing housekeeping or not? I don't care.
I guess we mentioned that we were doing an improv class.
Yeah.
And our last podcast was just before the show. So I guess if we open up the housekeeping.
Yeah, we can do that. Let's open it up.
Squeaky housekeeping door. How did the show go, Matt? What did you think?
I thought it went quite well. Like, so I was pretty nervous. Yeah, it's quite more so than I'd anticipated going into the course, not just from me, but from the classmates. You sort of realize how vulnerable a space people are in when they're performing and just, especially improvisation, where you're just throwing stuff out there on the fly, you haven't had any time to rehearse, any time. It's sort of like you can feel very quickly judged because this is like me putting my thoughts out there. Like, this isn't, I haven't had proofread or edited this or anything like that. So it was actually like quite nervous going up there and doing the show and sort of, especially when you got 8 people. Do I go in this scene? Do I let other people go in this scene? Like, especially for an overthinker like me. But I thought it went really well. I thought everyone had fun. It was such a lovely class. Like, everyone was so funny. And I think like, everyone was better in the performance than they were on Monday when the intensive class started.
Oh, absolutely.
So everyone got better. Everyone learnt something. Every single person, I laughed at something they did or said in that performance. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a great group. Some really funny people, some really unique and crazy people, which is fun to work with. Yeah. I think the show went, obviously, you know, we're all beginners. It's not like we went out there and crushed it out of the park like Amy Poehler and Matt Walsh or something. But, you know, in class, some things worked, some things didn't. I think in the show, there was at least like a funny thing in pretty much every scene that people did. There were a couple of really, really funny scenes.
There were no clunkers, were there? Like, every scene works, like, on some level. So, yeah, that's cool. So I was really glad I came and did that. And hopefully I'll stay in touch with some of the people we did the course with. Like, hopefully you, obviously. And
like that. That's it, Matt. We finished class. It's time to graduate from our friendship. You're on your own now. I've given you the tools.
Yeah.
Fly away.
So you've got that. but only something I've got. Like, I think you'll be able to stay in touch with a few of them because some of them live in LA, so that might be a bit easier for you than me. But
yeah, we got a good geographical mix. A lot of people had travelled for the course, which was kind of cool.
From Sydney to Orlando, they came from everywhere.
Very good. Let me see. Anything else to add?
No, if we think of something else, we can add it later, like in a future podcast. I don't know. Like, we don't get a certificate, do we? Do we get a certificate for finishing?
No, no certificate. Oh. I think just on your online login, they give you a green grade and some notes.
I get someone to put on my like wall or fridge or something.
You can print it out, I guess.
Yeah. Great.
All right. Well, there you go. We'll let you know if we have any other shows, I guess, for any Sydney listeners or LA listeners. If we're doing something, we'll plug the show.
Yes.
Until then, keep listening to the podcast. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Over and out.